And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. And today we have a very interesting topic. It's a topic of truth. I would like to examine with you as my friends going along for the journey and adventure today, the syndicate of death, solving the riddle of the JFK assassination, the anthrax murders, the DC Madam suicide, and what I call the many other curious crimes of the Illuminati. And I want to state a proposition for you right now today, and that is we know who assassinated President John F. Kennedy in November of 1963. We also know, yes, we know who it was that terrorized America by sending anthrax toxins by mail and committing murder in that situation. And we know that the more recent death of Deborah Jean Palfrey, who was called the DC Madam, was not a suicide. Now, today in this exclusive report, we're going to look at a few aspects, and maybe some of you who are really buffs on the JFK assassination, who read and study everything that you can on it, you might have most of that information. I hope you do. But I believe that most of the audience will not have it and deserve to know the truth about JFK's assassination and some of the wicked men surrounding that horrible incident in American history. We also need to know who is this syndicate of death, because they're continuing their operations. They're continuing to murder innocent people, and they have no conscience, and I believe they should be exposed. The syndicate of death. I want to talk about that. They are, in fact, a cartel, a combination, a group, a hidden group. They have many tentacles, but I believe there is a central locus or headquarters, you might say, of this evil cartel or syndicate of death. We first go to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. You know, I was a young man in 1963 when this occurred. I remember, as do most Americans alive at that time, exactly where I was when I heard about the assassination of President Kennedy. America seemed to be a more innocent place at the time. You may have heard the song by Don McLean called American Pie. Well, I think that song does indeed epitomize the incredible mind-warping reality that overtook America on that historic day, November of 1963. The song has the lyrics that this was the day the music died. The day the music died, America was finished. Some people believe that it literally was a coup against America, a coup d'etat. And I'm one of those convinced that it indeed was. And that a number of horrid groups and agencies collaborated in the murder of John F. Kennedy. President Kennedy had a lot of enemies, and it's amazing that he did so in, you know, just three short years, that he had such a, a stadium full of people who were opposed to him. One of the things that I now recognize about John Kennedy, but I didn't fully realize at the time, was that he was a man who wanted global or world peace. Truly did. And he also understood the big picture. His father was Joseph Kennedy, had been ambassador to Great Britain in the days leading up to, in the early days of World War II, and understood the Jews, the Rothschilds and the others, how they so much desperately wanted America to enter World War II, and in fact, Great Britain for that matter. Joseph Kennedy was opposed to World War II. It's not that he was a Nazi or favored Hitler, but he understood again the big picture of the communist Marxist Jews, the Rothschilds and so forth, and their grand plan for the world, and how they were manipulating events to bring America into the war. He opposed that, and because of his opposition, he was recalled as ambassador from Great Britain, and let's just say put out to pasture by Franklin D. Roosevelt. The reason is because Franklin D. Roosevelt was owned by Jewish interest. In fact, there was I call him President of FDR's Mordecai. Just read the book of Esther and you know what I'm talking about. His Mordecai was a man named Bernard Baruch, also his controller. Now, John F. Kennedy wanted world peace and he was determined to have it. One of the problems, however, was that Israel did not want the little nation of Israel that had been founded in 1948. So that was just 15 years prior to that. The leaders, being Marxist communists of Israel, did not want world peace. In fact, they wanted war in the Middle East so that they could plunder Palestine and much of the land and territories of the Middle East. Eisenhower, of course, had known about this, and Eisenhower had ordered the Jews of Israel to stop their attacks on their Arab neighbors. And in fact, in his farewell address to the nation, President Eisenhower had warned of the military-industrial complex, which was actually the Jews and their control of corporations and their control of the military powers of the United States. And he would have known about those things as a five-star general in World War II. But he waited until his farewell address. But even before that, after Israel, in collaboration with France and Britain, had invaded Egypt and had seized certain territories, even though there was no threat from Egypt, it was just a bald, naked, aggressive attack by Israel, Eisenhower promptly went before the national television and radio cameras and microphones and stated this attack will not stand, and he ordered Israel to withdraw from the lands that it had conquered. They were so frightened of Eisenhower, they did it, but they hated him. And then along comes John F. Kennedy, President of the United States. One of the things that Kennedy did was to have communication with the Prime Minister of Israel, a hideous monster of a man named David Ben-Gurion. And John F. Kennedy made plain to Mr. Ben-Gurion, the Prime Minister of Israel, that he knew of the fact that Israel had stolen the plans for the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb, and was in the process of making a number of atomic bombs with which they could terrorize their Arab neighbors. And President Kennedy was very much concerned about nuclear proliferation. And he told David Ben-Gurion, the Prime Minister of Israel, this too will not stand. Israel must give up its nuclear weapons. The United States will not allow either Israel or any of the other nations, including the Muslims, to have nuclear bombs. But to the Israelis, this was an ultimate disgrace, and they were determined to kill this man, John F. Kennedy. Now, John F. Kennedy and his family, the Kennedy family, had long been associated with the Italian mob. And I'm going to say that right up front. Even Joseph Kennedy himself, who was a bootlegger and had brought, into the United States all this illegal liquor and was very much working with the mafia interest, JFK and his brother Bobby were very much connected with the Italian mob. In fact, one of Kennedy's closest friends was an Italian mobster from Chicago named Sam Giancana. In fact, evidently, they shared the same prostitute, a call girl named Judith Exner. But Kennedy also knew something about the Chicago mobs, as did Mr. Giancana. And that was that the mob, the mafia that we call it, the Italian mafia, was a myth. In fact, the Italian mafia was controlled behind the scenes by a Jewish mafia. Recently, there was a book that was published, and I want to read to you from Forward.com. That's a Jewish website. In fact, Forward is the top Jewish publication in the United States. It's a magazine. Now, many Gentiles don't read it. Very few do. But I check in it from time to time because there's a lot of truth in Forward magazine published by Jews in America. Recently, on October the 27th, there was an article about a book, a new book that came out, written by a man named Gus Russo. The title was Super Mob. Super Mob. How Sidney Korshak and his criminal associates became America's hidden power brokers. Who is Sidney Korshak? Now, you've heard of Al Capone. You've heard of probably Santo Trafficante, Sam Giancana. You've heard of Joseph Gotti. And I suppose if you watch HBO for a long period of time, you'll hear about, what was their name? The Sopranos. Yeah, thank you. The Sopranos. And, of course, that's a fictitious Italian family. We've all read about these mobsters. Down in New Orleans, there was a Italian mobster named Carlos Marcello. But how many people have heard about the Jews, who actually were the powers behind all of the mafia? Now in America, the three ethnic groups that seem to be so tied up with mafia interest, gangster or mob interest, have been the Italians, the Irish, and the Jews. But of all these, the Italians and the Irish are like little bitty nobodies compared to the Jews. And Mr. Russo, in his book Super Mob, explained that Al Capone, Sam Giancana, and the others, they didn't run Chicago. Sidney Korshak did, a Jew. And in fact, Forward magazine and Forward.com, November 14, 2008, I have this article called Mafia Jews Inside a Genuine Cabal. A genuine cabal. They really were a genuine cabal. Or, secret society, conspiratorial group. Well, it's interesting that this Jewish magazine, Forward, says, hey, if you want somebody to illuminate you about the underworld, they actually use that word illumination, read this book, Super Mob. It's almost like the Jews are now proud of it. It's something that we hid for so long, but let me tell you now, ha, 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 we were the super mob. Not the Gottis, not the Sicilians, we the Jews. Powerful, the super mob. Now, in his book, that again, even the Jews themselves now admit is true, mafiosa like Al Capone, Tony Accardo, and others were controlled by Jews. Jews like Sidney Korshak, Jews like Meyer Lansky. Mm-hmm. The real center of mob power was a Chicago-born Jewish lawyer, Sidney Korshak. Now, interestingly enough, they are the ones who set up Las Vegas, not the Sicilians, not the Italians. It says here that one of the affluent, very rich sections of Chicago is called Lawndale, a suburb of Chicago. It's a place, says Forward Magazine, so crowded with Jews that it was known as Kosher Calcutta. But there, living amid crowded streets and a corrupt civic landscape, was a band of young first-generation immigrant Jewish kids who were determined to make it big in American life at any moral price. And so they did. They made history, becoming the kingmakers and power brokers of the mob. Now, the JFK assassination. Certainly the FBI was involved. J. Edgar Hoover helped to cover it up. And so did the Central Intelligence Agency. But let's look at some of the characters involved. Let's take, for example, the man who supposedly was the lone nut assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald. Many people say that Oswald was Jewish. Isn't that interesting? Oswald, it is a Jewish name. But did he really kill Kennedy at all? Was he not just a small cog in the overall conspiratorial machine? Of course he was. We know that now. But who killed Lee Harvey Oswald to cover up the whole scheme of things? It was a man named Jack Ruby. But his real name wasn't Ruby. It was Rubenstein, and he was Jewish. Now, according to the Warren Commission, they admitted that the night before he killed Lee Harvey Oswald to shut him up, Jack Ruby, a.k.a. Rubenstein, spent quite a bit of time at a local Jewish synagogue. You think he was a real devout Jew, don't you? No. In fact, they said that he never went to the synagogue, but he went there that night. Is it because he had a fit of conscience and he knew he was going to murder a person? Hey, get real. This was a guy who had long been a Jewish murderous thug. Look, let me tell you a little bit about Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby was a gun runner and brought in guns and arms into Cuba, to Castro in the 1950s. He was one of the Jews who were arming Fidel Castro. Isn't that interesting? Arming Fidel Castro. Well, of course, Castro was a communist, and the Jewish mafia in America are communists, as are the Jews who run Israel today. The leaders of Israel are all communists. So Jack Ruby was a gun runner to Castro. Now let me name two men who associated with him in that little enterprise run by the Jewish mafia. There was a man named Norman Rothman, a Jew, and another man named Mickey Cohen, a Jew. Three Jews arming a man who turned out to be one of America's dreaded enemies, Fidel Castro. Castro was armed by Rothman, Cohen, and Rubenstein. The same Rubenstein that later became the murderer of Lee Harvey Oswald. By the way, I have a photograph of the gravestone of Jack Ruby. And guess what language the inscription is in, and his name. Unless you read Hebrew, you won't be able to tell it's Jack Ruby's gravestone, or exactly at least all of what it says. It's in Hebrew, of course. He was a Hebrew, a Jewish assassin. Now, Mr. Rubenstein had a long history in the Jewish mafia. In fact, did you know that Jack Ruby was a member of the Teamsters Union in Chicago? But wait. You see, he worked for the Jew that secretly ran the Teamsters Union during the days of James Hoffa. Oh, you think Hoffa was a gangster? Well, he was. But Hoffa was an Italian. His boss was a man named Paul Dorfman. And Jack Rubinstein worked for him and was his hatchet man. And when I use the word hatchet, well, the secretary treasurer of an organization called the Central States Teamster Pension Fund had control of all the money of the union. Hundreds of millions of dollars. It was to go for the pensions, retirements of those hard-working Teamsters, hard-working men. But the Jewish mafia wanted their little mitts on that money. So they sent Jack Ruby to murder, and he did murder the secretary treasurer. And in 1939, Mr. Paul Dorfman became head of it. Hoffa, he was just a figurehead all along. And Dorfman headed up all the money. Central States Teamster Pension Fund. It seems that Dorfman's son was the one who paid Jack Ruby, Rubinstein, that is, a large sum of money to pre-arrange Dallas. Pre-arrange Dallas for the hit on JFK. In other words, pay off the cops, pay off the DA. And when Lee Harvey Oswald got caught, they said, Rubinstein, it's your mission to kill him. Now, they told Rubinstein, evidently, that they would have a psychiatrist that would declare him crazy, insane. And he would have to spend several years in a country club, you know, hospital in the mental ward, where they would funnel him, you know, all of his prostitutes and all the sirloin steaks or whatever he wanted to eat, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. He'd be living like a prince of Israel in a mental ward for several years. And he would be honored by the Jews. And once he got out of the mental ward, he would go to Israel, where he would live like a prince for the rest of his life, with a harem of prostitutes. That was what they told poor old Jack Ruby. But once he had done the dirty deed and covered up things by, you know, shooting Lee Harvey Oswald, it never transpired. You can't trust thieves. You can't trust murderers. And suddenly they said he had cancer. And within 30 days, he was a dead man. Ruby begged the Warren Commission. He said, I'll spill the beans. I'll tell you everything I know. A coup d'etat has occurred in America. And I'll tell you what I know, but I can't do it here because I'm being watched. They know about that. They're going to kill me here. If you'll take me to Washington, D.C., I'll tell you everything I know. But Judge Warren and all the others, being a part of the conspiracy, said, oh, we're so sorry, Mr. Ruby. We don't have the authority to do that. He was a dead man, and he knew it, and he died right there in that prison cell. Now, JFK not only died, but what happened to his pal, the Italian mafia leader, Giancana? June the 19th, 1975, the FBI was guarding him 24 hours a day. It just so happened, though, that one day they forgot 1 hour. Yeah, the FBI people guarding his home omitted one fatal hour. And during that hour, an assassin went into his home. There in the kitchen, they found Mr. Sam Giancana and murdered him. As was Salvatore Granello, who was shot found shot to death in a cornfield, and James Blue Mary strangled to death, and of course Hoffa. It looks like JFK and all of his friends met their maker, my friends. JFK. Lyndon Johnson knew it was going to occur. Everything started going good for Israel after the death of JFK. They got more and more money, more and more arms. Well, they got so audacious that they actually slaughtered a number of American sailors on the USS Liberty, and Lyndon Johnson covered that up for them. They got everything they wanted. Meanwhile, the myth continued. The myth of the Italian mafia, covered up by J. Edgar Hoover and his gay lover. Now, let's talk about the anthrax murders. The anthrax murders. You know, that's pretty well covered up now. They tried to blame it on a couple of people, but it didn't work out. Now, I've had a whole program, and I told you what really happened in the anthrax terrorist murders. As it turns out, it seems that the Jews were behind this, too. I want to read to you an article by Hector Carrion, and it corroborates what I know about the anthrax murders. It's dated Los Angeles, California. I mean, I'm just going to read to you directly because I want you to understand what happened here. Jewish macrobiologist Dr. Philip M. Zack may be behind the deadly anthrax-contaminated letters that were mailed to NBC's Tom Brokaw, Senator Tom Daschle, and others, according to FBI sources. In a rapidly unraveling investigation by the FBI, it appears that the Arab-hating Jew, quote-unquote, Dr. Philip Zack, was behind a vile conspiracy to frame a colleague who was born in Egypt and a Muslim and who worked along with Dr. Zack at the U.S. Army's Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases in Fort Detrick, Maryland. Now, it seems that this Dr. Philip M. Zack, a Jewish microbiologist, was hired to work on these deadly biological agents. But so was a Muslim, a Dr. Ayad Assad. Now, when the incident came out and everybody in America was frightened to death of this white powder, that had killed a couple of, I remember, employees of the Postal Service. News came out that the anthrax terrorists may just be Zionist. That was as far back as October 9th, 2001. But it was all covered up. It was all covered up. They tried to blame it on a Gentile man named Hatfield and others. And more recently, there was a gentleman who died. They claimed he committed suicide, and then they tried to pin it on him. But in fact, everything can be traced back to this Jewish scientist, Dr. Philip M. Zack. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about Dr. Zack and his little role in this anthrax murder. And then we're also going to get to the D.C. madam who was suicided. As we're discussing now, my friends, the Syndicate of Death. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. This Tex Mars again. I pray that you have by now ordered both of my new videos, because they are blockbusters. I want to tell you about them if you haven't. The first one is entitled, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. And it uncovers all of the architectural secrets of the Astors, the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Rothschilds, and other members of the Illuminati, the dynasties, the bloodlines. What we do is take a little peek. We go behind the iron gates and the huge walls, and we penetrate inside the estates, inside the homes of the super rich. And you'll be amazed at the gargoyles and demon figures and idols. And wow, you gotta have this video, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. Then you'll understand the sick, disgusting, deadly mindset of the Illuminati, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell. Now, we have another video entitled Architectural Colossus. Architectural Colossus. And this is, it really reveals the mysterious monuments of magic and occultism that have arisen across this globe. They're found in countries around the world. And of course, I examine this very subject in my best-selling book, Mysterious Monuments, which is an encyclopedia of Illuminati architectural designs and idols and buildings and so forth. But now this video, invite your friends over and watch this video, and I promise you, boy, the secrets it reveals are amazing. Architectural Colossus, the mysterious monuments that now enshroud the whole world with magic and seduction. Now, either Architectural Colossus or the video Where the Rich and Famous Dwell are available for $25 each. Now, when you order them, please specify whether you want the VHS, the older format, which we still have, or the new DVD format. Now, each of these videos is $25. Please add $4 for shipping and handling. Again, the videos Where the Rich and Famous Dwell or Architectural Colossus. To get them, simply phone us toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-800-234-9673, or you can write to us, send us a check or money order or cash for $29. That would be $25 plus $4 shipping and handling. Send that to Power of Prophecy, 1708, that's 1708, Patterson, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 in the United States of America. Now, you can go online to powerofprophecy.com, and there on our homepage, you'll see an ad for each of these videos, and check it out. And we have articles, feature articles, talking about either one of these videos too, Where the Rich and Famous Dwell or Architectural Colossus. powerofprophecy.com. Now, our phone number, toll-free in the United States, is 1-800-234-9673. To use your charge card, MasterCard, or Discover, and order either or both of these outstanding videos. Now, let's return to our regular program. We're talking about the Syndicate or Cartel of Death. And we were specifically talking about the anthrax murders. At Fort Detrick, I pronounce it, Biochemical Research Laboratory, the FBI has determined, and you can Google this up, that this is the place that maintains stores of weapons-grade anthrax, commonly known as the Ames, that's A-M-E-S, strain of Bacillus anthracis. That's the anthrax that was sent. You'll remember that some postal workers got sick, and I believe a couple died. Also, envelopes containing this deadly toxin were sent to the tabloid called The Sun in Florida, and the photo editor of that publication, Robert Stevens, died. And all five individuals were killed from anthrax infection. Now, here's an interesting thing for you. It came out afterwards that prior to this anthrax being sent out in envelopes to Senator Daschle's office and through the Postal Service to the Sun tabloid in Florida and so forth, before anyone even knew that anthrax was being sent by mails, the Bush White House began to issue an antibiotic, a very high-level, complex, sophisticated antibiotic known as Cipro, C-I-P-R-O. And the White House told all of the top employees of the White House, something is going to happen. You must start taking Cipro, just in case. Really? Think about that. Now, Cipro is, in fact, the very antibiotic that the medical profession uses when somebody contracts this deadly disease called anthrax. Cipro. Now, lower-grade antibiotics don't even work. They have no effect at all on anthrax. You must take Cipro to have any chance. Now, if you have Cipro operating in your system, when you come into contact with this deadly toxin, there is a great chance that you will not be inflicted with the disease. So it's very important, if you know that anthrax is going to be sent, just in case some of it gets maybe on somebody's hand or whatever, maybe from maybe they visited Senator Daschle's office or some other source. It's very important to have Cipro in your blood system working. How did the Bush White House know that anthrax was going to be sent by the mail so that they could begin taking Cipro in advance? Now imagine George W. Bush and Dick Cheney took Cipro before anthrax was even known as a problem. Isn't that interesting? And would you believe it? The media hasn't even asked questions about that. But here's something else that they've never told us about. We know now that some Arab terrorist could not have been the ones guilty of sending this anthrax out. You know why? Because it came directly from Fort Detrick. Because it's almost like a formula. This stuff is designed almost like DNA, you know, in a certain chemical pattern. And they know where it came from. It wasn't created in some, you know, garage laboratory or overseas even, you know, in Iran or Iraq or somewhere. It came from Fort Detrick, Maryland. Now, who was there that did this? Well, it seems that there was a Jewish scientist named Philip Zack who worked there. He worked at the Army's bioweapons lab at Fort Detrick in Maryland during the 1990s. Now, during that time, Mr. Zack, this Jew, and a group of co-workers, mostly Jewish, began to harass and carry out a hateful campaign against a Muslim who worked there, a Dr. Assad, A-S-A-A-D. In fact, they were so successful that Dr. Assad was forced to resign. Now, you have to ask the question in the first place, why were these Zionists working there? And why was this Muslim working there? Well, I think you know the answer to that. The cartel of death, the syndicate of death, intends to give Arab friends of America intelligence agencies such as Pakistan's, now Iraq's, and other friendly nations, chemical biological weapons. And we're training their scientists at Fort Detrick, but we're also training Israeli Zionist scientists, so that Israel will also have these same weapons. We are equipping both Muslim friends and Israeli friends, quote unquote, with biological chemical weapons to use. That's the big secret of Fort Detrick. But let's return now to the case we have at hand. These deadly pathogens created in a laboratory, just as AIDS was, by the way, the AIDS virus. But it seems that the Zionists didn't like it that the Arabs were getting it, getting the same training and the same expertise as they were. And they began to carry out a campaign against Dr. Assad. Now, it appears that the conspirators, the Jews, had the support of the laboratory's commanding officer. Among other things, these Jewish bigots wrote and passed around a very crude poem denigrating, making fun of Arab Americans. They also began passing around an obscene rubber camel with its organ, let's just call it, shown in a very crude way. And they ask each other, let us join the Rubber Camels Club. And they sent this obscene rubber camel to Dr. Assad with a poem that was lewd and mocked Dr. Assad. Well, as I said, it was outfitted with all manner of sexually explicit appendages. The poem read this way. It said, in Assad's honor, we created this beast. It represents life lower than yeast. And they said, this rubber camel will be given each week to the employee at the laboratory who does the least. Well, in any case, Dr. Assad, knowing that these Jews were out to get him and making him a scapegoat, finally was forced to leave the office, to leave his work. Now, it just so happened that right before the anthrax was sent out in these envelopes, and the way they were done, very cartoonish, seemed to be from Arabs. Remember that on the outside of the envelope? Seemed to be sent by Arab terrorists. The FBI received a letter from anonymous persons who blamed the whole thing on Dr. Assad, former employee at the laboratory. Yeah, they blamed him. They said, Dr. Assad did this. Investigate him. He's the guy who did it. So the FBI began to investigate the laboratory and Dr. Assad. But what they found was very interesting. It turned out that Dr. Assad wasn't guilty at all. It's true that evidently somebody had tampered and even stolen lab specimens of anthrax spores, Ebola virus, and other pathogens. These had been disappearing from the Army's Biological Warfare Research Facility for years. Somebody had been stealing them. Friends, somebody out there has Ebola virus, anthrax, and other deadly viruses. I wonder who? Well, don't wonder anymore. It seems that the FBI already had in its files some information. A previous inquiry had come up with the fact that somebody had been secretly entering the laboratory late at night to conduct unauthorized research involving anthrax. In fact, a mystery researcher had been let into the laboratory. And a laboratory scientist, Dr. Mary Beth Downs, told FBI investigators that she had come to work several times only to find that somebody had been in the laboratory doing mysterious work on her electron microscope, clandestine research. And so the FBI then, of course, wanted to know who this mystery person was. Guess who it turned out to be? You see, they have, like any other research laboratory of the U.S. Army that's top secret, they had cameras posted throughout the facility. And it seems that one of the Jewish scientists was letting a man who had been fired for harassing Dr. Assad, a man named Lieutenant Colonel Philip Zack, the Jewish Zionist scientist who had been fired now as a security risk, a Dr. Marion Rippey, it seems, had been letting him into the laboratory. And Dr. Zach came in to do his dirty work. Boy, what kind of faulty security is that? A disreputable former employee, a Zionist wacko named Philip Zach, had been surreptitiously allowed into. They unlocked the door and allowed him in there. And you know he was taking out anthrax and everything else in the world. And so the FBI put two and two together. Guess who tried to pin the thing on Dr. Assad? Duh. But friends, as of this date, Dr. Philip Zach has not been arrested. Basically, he broke into the laboratory and he was assisted by Dr. Marion Rippey. And neither one of them have been hauled before a court of justice, but people are dead from anthrax. But no one at the White House died. They knew to take Cipro in advance. Well, there you have the story. America is training Muslim and Jewish scientists and arming them with the knowledge of deadly pathogens. Oh, I know, it's only our Muslim friends. We wouldn't give it to our Muslim enemies. Friends, one day they're our friends, the next our enemies. It switches according to the day of the month it is. And the Jews have never been our friends. They put Israel first, and they always have. Now, in the short time we've got, I want to talk about the DC madam. She predicted she would be suicided. That's what she said. She predicted it. Let me read to you this news article. It says, DC madam Deborah Jean Palfrey predicted she would be suicided on several occasions. Both recently and as far back as 17 years ago, comments that now appear ominous in light of the announcement that the former head of a Washington brothel or escort service allegedly killed herself today. Wow. My good friend Alex Jones had Deborah Palfrey on his show several times. And Palfrey had told Alex Jones on his show, she said, if I'm ever found dead and they say it's suicide, don't believe them. Quote, no, I am not planning to commit suicide, Palfrey told the Alex Jones show. I am planning on going into court and defending myself vigorously and exposing the government. Friends, she had the names. Talk about Elliot Spitzer getting exposed. Deborah Palfrey had the names. I wonder if Dick Cheney was on that list. I wonder if Harry Reid was on the list, that list. How about Barney Fagg or Frank? All the others. Oh, yeah. In fact, as I'm reading to this to you right now, did you know that senator, is it Feinstein or Barbara Boxer? I think it's Boxer. The Jewish senator from California, her chief aide, her chief legislative assistant was just arrested for child porno, being involved in distributing 500 images of little boys having sex. Sickos. That whole Washington, D.C. crowd. Listen. Deborah Jean Palfrey had the names of well-known clients of her upscale call girl ring in the nation's capital. And she had indicated, she had suggested that Dick Cheney, the vice president, may just be one of them. It goes very high, she said, on the Alex Jones show. And she mentioned that a United States senator was probably involved. Probably. Mm-hmm. Blanche Palfrey, her mother, said, I have had no signs that my daughter was suicidal. Were drugs or alcohol involved? Police Captain Jeffrey Young said no, he denied it. Yet she was found in a shed in her backyard. Now, friends, do you think she would go to a shed in her backyard and kill herself? What a coincidence. She was suicided. Now, friends, these people are the mothers of all liars. Do you remember Ted Olson, Solicitor General of the United States? His wife, Barbara Olson, supposedly made a phone call from Flight 77 on 9/11. Never happened. It's come out now that it couldn't have happened. You see, the phone records have now been released, and there was no phone call from Barbara Olson. But he said his wife called him and asked him, called him at the Justice Department, way up in the air, said, what do you think we should do? What should we do during the hijacking? See, this is the only evidence we know that Flight 77 was even hijacked, from Barbara Olson, a lawyer, her phone call. Really? And who did she call? Her husband, who worked for George W. Bush in the Attorney General's office. He first said, well, she called on her cell phone, but then the records indicated there was no call. He said, well, it must have been one of those phones, you know, those in-flight phones. But the in-flight phone people said, well, there was no credit card from Olson. And then it was said, well, maybe she borrowed somebody else's credit card. Why would a woman say, hey, have you got a credit card I can use? Wouldn't an attorney on a flight, a scheduled flight, a passenger, have her credit cards with her? Of course she would. But as it turns out, there was no call made from that flight. Liars. Pure liars. Then there was the other famous call. Remember Todd Beamer? Oh, they made movies about it. Oh, yeah. Todd Beamer. He's the guy that supposedly said, what'd he say? Let's roll. Let's go attack. He was a hero. Now, it turned out that he was gay, but nevertheless, he was a hero, a gay hero. He said, me and the other passengers, we're going to try to take back the aircraft from the Arab terrorist. Now, we wouldn't know anything about Arab terrorists taking over that other flight there if it hadn't been for Todd Beamer's phone call that he made to his wife. Oh, hold it. Hold it just a minute. It wasn't his wife? Oh, no. His wife said she never got a phone call. As it turns out, Beamer's wife said the GTE, the telephone corporation, said one of their employees got the phone call. Yeah, yeah. Lisa Jefferson, Todd Beamer's wife, said Todd never called me. According to the phone company, he spoke for 13 minutes to an operator to whom he supposedly gave detailed information about the hijacking. Now note that. Mrs. Lisa Beamer says, I never received a telephone call from my husband. She was told, quote unquote, by an operator, actually by the phone company, that one of their operators had allegedly, that her husband had allegedly called. Friends, this is a media con job. The wife of the guy who said, let's roll, never called his wife. And Miss Barbara Olson never called her husband. By the way, there's one thing that the U.S. Solicitor General Ted Olson did say that we ought to take advantage of and pay attention to very carefully. Did you know that he once addressed the Supreme Court of the United States? And he defended the right of government officials to lie to American citizens publicly. Think about that. Ted Olson, the very one who lied about his wife, phoning him from that aircraft, Flight 77, addressed the Supreme Court and tried to justify the U.S. government and its officials lying to the people. Here's what he said. Quote, this is what he told now the Supreme Court, this Ted Olson, who later lied about receiving a phone call from his wife. He said, quote, it is easy to imagine an infinite number of situations where government officials might quite legitimately have reasons to give out false information. There's an infinite number of, you know, infinite number of situations it's easy to imagine, he said, that government officials might give out false information to the people, to the public, over the press. Well, Mr. Olson, you should know. The D.C. madam said, I will never commit suicide, but she's dead. And John F. Kennedy told the Jews of Israel, you must give up your nuclear weapons. I will not have a nuclear war in the Middle East. He's dead. And Dr. Philip Zack did indeed sneak into Fort Detrick's laboratory, and then somebody, was it Dr. Zack, tried to blame it on a Muslim. But, you know, Dr. Zack is still free. His name's not even in the press. What I've just told you is sort of inside information. You know, just nondescript news sources. Did you read it on the front page of your newspaper that Dr. Zack had done these horrible things? No. Did you know that George Bush and the White House had started issuing out Cipro and ordering their employees to take it before the anthrax was found? No. You mean Tom Brokaw didn't tell you? Katie Couric? Bill O'Reilly? Sean Hannity? Geraldo Rivera? They didn't tell us about these things that the Syndicate of Death did. They didn't tell you that Jack Ruby's real name was Rubenstein? They didn't tell you that he was a gun runner of the Jewish Mafia to Fidel Castro? Really? I wonder why. I wonder why they're hiding it from me. Well, friends, I think I know. I don't have the exact reason, but wasn't it the U.S. Solicitor General Theodore Olson who said, quote, it is easy to imagine an infinite number of situations where government officials might quite legitimately have reasons to give out false information? Well, the media do too. It's for our own good. They lie about the D.C. madam for your own good. And by the way, she wasn't the only person who died in that situation. At least one or maybe two of the call girls who worked for her also were found suicided. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They didn't want them to talk, did they? John F. Kennedy, Sam Giancana. And you know, friends, when we look at this cartel of death, remember the list of people who died under President Bill Clinton? The murdered list? Do you think it's going to stop now that the Clinton and Bush dynasties are out of office? Not at all. Rahm Emanuel, part of the Chicago mob, the Jewish mob. He's the White House chief of staff. The cartel of death, the syndicate of death, continues on. This is Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. And my supreme prayer and wish is that you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.